Welcome to episode 3 of the Soccer on the Rise podcast on Last Word on Soccer. My name is Thomas Neff. I'm your host, and I am pleased to be joined by Scott Strasser, Calgary correspondent from Away from the Numbers, and Nolan Kangas, contributing writer for Forge FC on CanPL.ca. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Hey, thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, thanks. Really appreciate it. Yeah.
So let's dive into the action, shall we? For both of you, Calgary and Forge have been by far the two best teams in this league. Hasn't even been close with the rest of the five teams. So would you guys say this is a more than deserving final? Scott, let's start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at pretty much every statistical category, Calgary and Forge lead the way, whether it's number of wins, number of points, clean sheets, goals scored versus goals against. They really led the way from day one, essentially, and there hasn't been much competition. I mean, you look at some of these stats, right? Like, Cavalry got 62 points overall in the two seasons, spring and fall. Forge got 56, and they finished first and second, respectively, in both seasons. But, I mean, after those two, I mean, third place would have gone to York 9, and they got 34 points. So, not even really close, and goal differential as well. Cavalry had plus 32 overall goal differential. Forge had plus 19. York in third had plus 2, but I think all the other four teams were in the negative. So, and clean sheets, I think 12 for Cavalry, 11 for Forge. Again, they've just been the class of the CPL this year, and from a statistical perspective, I see no other teams that really deserve to be in this final.
Nolan, what's your take?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like, these two teams clearly have the most talent, and it's always fun when they get together and play a couple matches. I remember it kind of feels, definitely for me, when I'm, you know, getting at Tim Hortons Field for practices prior to when they're taking on Cavalry, that there's a little more emotion during training, especially when I'm asking the guys, and you can tell that they're amped up for the game. So now that we get a two-leg final, it's always exciting. And, you know, just I think everyone on Calgary's side and everybody on Forge FC side know this is our rival. Like, there's respect for the 905 Derby, but this is the true rivalry of the CPL, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, and let's talk about that rivalry that exists between these two teams. How did it actually start, and how evenly matched are these two teams?
Well, I'd say the rivalry, the first time these two teams played, it was a very tight matchup that Cavalry won with a 93rd-minute goal. I think this was back May 12th at Tim Hortons Field. Nico Pasquati, who was still kind of relatively unknown at that time, he came on as a sub and scored a 93rd-minute goal to win the game for Cavalry 2-1. I feel like Forge players probably felt a little hard done by because they probably outplayed Cavalry throughout the 90 minutes, and but they didn't get the points. And then the next time these two teams played, it was in the Canadian Championship, and that was probably the real birth of the rivalry, because once again Forge outplayed Cavalry on their home field, but 96 minutes, Cavalry won a penalty, and Dominique Malanga put the ball in the back of the net to win the game for Cavalry. He did a little goal celebration, and something bad happened after that. There was a kind of a brawl between the two teams on the pitch. There were some allegations from Cavalry's players about some offensive things that one of the Forge assistant coaches said, and I think ever since then there's been some spice whenever these two teams play. And they've been playing a lot. This will be their 8th and 9th times playing against each other this year.
Well, and Nolan, same question for you. And just to tweak it a little bit, how much of this rivalry is sportive as much as all the controversial things that happen off the field?
Yeah, so I believe the rivalry did start probably in that first tilt in the Canadian Championship, just because of everything that happened off the field. I remember, you know, being there, and obviously that call was so wonky, and it wasn't Tristan Henry who was in between the sticks, right? Because he was given a red card. So was it Janssen or Crutzen? Someone who obviously wasn't a goalkeeper had to go and try and stop Malanga's penalty. So there was that whole controversy and everything off the field. So I remember all us writers were already leaving and going down to get interviews. And then we heard, you know, kind of the fans like yelling and screaming. And we're like, oh, what's going on? Ran back and we saw everything that was going on the pitch. So that was pretty wild. But for Forge's perspective, if you talk to Bobby, Coach Bobby Spiriniotis, obviously, I feel like he shies away from talking about it. Obviously, Peter Reinders, he won't really comment on what happened in that. Whereas, you know, the Calvary coach, Tommy Wieland, I think he loves it. And I think it gets him amped up every single time. I remember talking to him after one of these games, and he was just, I believe he was saying, just, this is perfect. This is so good for the league, and we're glad we're a part of it. So, like, with the controversy, I would say, you know, we tried to figure out as much as possible and didn't get too many answers. But just, yeah, like the rivalry, I'm glad it is where it is. And, you know, it's not obviously the greatest that it had to get to that ugly boiling point. But, you know, it's good to see some tension in, you know, some of these games for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Nolan. And I think the players have really taken to this rivalry as well, and like every time these two teams play against each other, it's entertaining, it's close, they're very evenly matched. I think we're going to talk about that next, and you can see that in that Cavalry's won 3 times, Forge's won 3 times, and there's been a draw in the 7 times they played against each other. Both teams have scored 7 goals each in those 7 matches, so it really opens up the final, and it's really hard to predict what will happen given how close these two teams are when they play against each other.
And to touch on your point, too, I was looking at the numbers as well, and I was actually shocked how close all these matches have been. Like, obviously, you know, getting all nitpicky, shots on target is 24-24. That's how, you know, tight these teams are and how, you know, good and competitive they are, which is good as well.
Yeah, and every time they've played, it's either been a one-goal game or a draw. And no team has scored more than 2 against each other, as far as I can tell.
Nolan, you touched on a very important point, which is your experience covering this team. And not just analyzing from a perspective, but also just speaking to the players, speaking to the coaches, and really covering the team from game one up until now. Nolan, exactly what are Forge's strengths, and how can they come out on top?
Tough question. I think their strengths, obviously, is, in my opinion, what is the best duo in the league, which is the Becker-Borges duo. And obviously, I think in the midfield, they're really talented as well, and they move the ball quite well and with a possession style. And if that's their key, right? Get it into Borges on his left foot, see what he can do. Obviously, they have some other decent pieces up front, say whether it's Novak, if Cadel Thomas is healthy. But I think it just starts with Becker and Borges. That's where I think their strength is, and that's obviously going to be a key thing in this final, because in my opinion, I think Cavalry's strength is obviously their back end.
Yeah, good point, Nolan. Obviously, defense is very important to Cavalry. It's reflected in the number of clean sheets they've gotten, with 12 this year in the CPL, as well as the number of goals they've conceded, which is 19 against, compared to Forge with 26. Players like Marco Carducci, Dominic Zator, Mason Trafford, very important to Cavalry, lots of size, but also good at winning tackles, winning headers, good with the ball as well. So I definitely think Cavalry's success starts with the back line, the center backs, the goalkeeper, and the fullbacks. So defense is key for Cavalry, but when they have the ball, I'd say the reason they managed to win so much is that they're just very practical and very adaptable. So depending on the team they're playing, they might line up, you know, to be possession heavy. I noticed when they play the weaker teams in the CPL, they have a lot of the ball and they move it from left to right. They build from the back, much like Forge do on a regular basis. But in those tough games against the likes of Forge or when they were playing the MLS teams, Cavalry were more than willing to be direct, get the ball into the other team's defensive third, get the ball, you know, out wide, pump crosses in, look for the likes of Dominique Malanga and Jordan Brown. And if it's a set piece, look for Dominic Sator to get their head on it. Oliver Minutel as well scored from quite a few set pieces this season. When you have players like Julian Boucher and Jose Escalante, you know they can get the ball in accurately. So set pieces were very key to Cavalry's success this year, as well as that strong defense. Something, you know, we reporters always ask Tommy, like, what did the team do to churn out the win today? Because there were so many times where Cavalry scored late or, you know, made a or Carducci or Giannopoulos made an important save late in the game to kind of rescue a result. He always talks about the team's resilience, the attitude of the players, the, you know, never say die attitude. You can see that in the playing style of players like Nico Pasquati or Nick Ledgerwood. They just hate losing. They love winning, and they will do, you know, whatever it takes to do that. One last point is depth. So Cavalry has, in my opinion, one of, if not the deepest benches in the league. And regardless of who's on the field for Cavalry, they don't really seem to go down a gear. I mean, like you saw Camargo get injured, Sergio Camargo, the team's attacking midfielder, get injured halfway through the season. And Oliver Minutel, who hadn't really had many opportunities to play in the spring, like he came in and filled in for him and scored 7 goals in the fall season. So same up front. I mean, you can switch out Jordan Brown and Dominique Malanga. I think Cavalry has 4 good central midfielders, 2 very good keepers. So they definitely have like a stacked roster.
So the next question is, give me your guys' predicted starting 11s. You guys have followed the team through thick and thin, and give your reasoning as well for each position. Nolan, I'll start with you.
So in goal, I think it's going to be Tristan Henry. I just think that's who Bobby has the most faith in. I think he's been the better of the two goaltenders. Touching on what Scott was saying with Carducci. Carducci, you know, far and away been the best goaltender, and I think that's what's been the kind of one of the weaknesses for Forge is whether it's Henry or Q, they do. There's that odd goal where it's, you're kind of shocked that they even let it in. So that's something that's gonna, you know, be a huge factor in the game. Back end, Kwame Awua, Dennis Crutzen. Edgar, obviously. Dom Samuel is suspended, so not going to be him. So we'll see who's going to be back there. I would hope it's, you know, I would move Johnson back there and then have Frano and Cisse. I really like Frano and Cisse. And sometimes Cisse has those flashes where you see his talent and how good he is on the ball, and then other times you just see odd mistakes. So, you know, if he plays, you know, to his abilities, that'll be fun as well. And then obviously Becker is, you know, a really talented attacking midfielder. So he'll be there and dishing out a ton of passes. And then I do like Novak and Cadel Thomas coming off the bench. That's who I would have, you know, subbing on late. Even David Schwanier. So maybe whether it's Nanko, Johnny Grant, if he's healthy, and Borges up front, that's who I would have. I feel like it's going to be something similar to that. It's just going to be who's going to be on the back end replacing Dom Samuel.
I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot because if you're Tommy Wheeldon Jr. or if you're Bobby Smyrniotis, like, do you approach this in a way of saying, I want to roll the dice and do something different, something that the other side doesn't expect? Or do you say, okay, I want to line up the way we did when we beat them last time, with the knowledge, however, that they might have spent some time preparing for that? Cavalry have done so many different formations and styles of play this year, whether it's a 3-4-1-2, 4-3-3, 3-4-3, 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2. I could see any of those formations occurring. In my opinion, Cavalry play their best with a back three, honestly. So if I were to line up Cavalry, I mean, I'm not a coach, but I would go with Carducci and net, back three being Joel Waterman, Mason Trafford in the middle, and Dominic Sator on the right. Jay Wheeldon is coming back from injury, so I wouldn't start him. But the four in front of those three would be in the middle. I think I'd go with Julian Boucher and Nick Ledgerwood. If his head injury is okay, if his head is okay, I'd start with those two. A lot of steel. Although I think Elijah Adekubi could do a job if Ledgerwood is still, you know, not quite ready to come back into matches. But on the wings, I would go with, probably Mavilla on the left. Even though that's kind of a midfield role, I think he could do a job there. He's good at staying wide, so I like him out there when Cavalry are on the ball. On the right, I think that would be Nico Pasquati. I don't think he's been as effective in the fall season as in the spring, but he still brings a ton of energy to every game he plays, never stops hounding fullbacks, very intense player, and just super resilient and never stops running. So I'd go with those as my midfield four, and then left wing, Jose Escalante, in the middle, Malanga, and then on the right, I'd like to see Jordan Brown in there. I think he was actually playing left wing while Jose Escalante was recently suspended for three games, so maybe switch him and Jose around and put Jordan on the left and Jose on the right so he can cut in on his left foot, but I think those are the 11 I'd start with, but again, like that 11, there's some elements of something Forge hasn't seen yet from Cavalry, but same lineup that I think has given Cavalry a lot of success this year in a 3-4-3. But I think I just realized I forgot about Sergio Camargo. So again, like maybe Camargo in for Ledgerwood in that midfield and let him push up a little more.
So tactically speaking, the last two games that they face each other in the month of October, did each coach keep their cards close to their chest?
I think so. I think they, you know, what was the date when, you know, each punch, well, obviously Cavalry punched their ticket after winning the spring portion, but I forget when Forge, you know, claimed it, but it was early on, right? It's been forever since we knew it was going to be these two teams, so I definitely think they kept it close to their chest, and Bobby doesn't really like revealing too much. You try to get as much out of him and you're going to get kind of the same answer, whether, you know, it's just kind of basic. He'll just, you know, go on a tangent about, you know, we try different things. We try different guys in different positions and we'll do this and do that. And he won't really give you a straight answer. So I think he's definitely saving up maybe sort of what Scott was saying too, is that, you know, Cavalry's going to throw some different looks. I think Forge is going to as well. I don't think, you know, either side really cared about those games. Maybe a little bit of bragging rights for Tommy Wilton Jr. and Cavalry claiming both the summer and the spring.
Yeah, no, I agree with Nolan. I don't think either coach wanted to reveal too much with those most recent two games. That said, there were some very entertaining games in there, and it was a pretty good prequel for the final.
Excellent. Scott, what's Tommy Wilton Jr.'s philosophy, his way of play?
Oh, like I think I've brought it up before. It's that practical and adaptable approach with a strong back line. Something I thought was interesting he mentioned earlier was when he was signing players this year, he said he wanted to have a lot of experience in Cavalry's spine, right? So that's why you have all the players who are in their 30s are kind of in the middle of the pitch, whether it's Jay Wheeldon at center back or Ledgerwood in the midfield and Dominique Malanga up front. And then you you have that experience in the middle of the park and in the center of the field. And then you kind of, you know, you have your young and maybe more fit players on the outside. So it's been interesting to watch Cavalry this year and just watch all the different styles of play they've done and watch substitutes come in and do a good job. And just the overall resilience of the team has been very apparent in that they keep winning and they find different ways to do it.
Nolan, would you say that Bobby's style is a very heavy possession game. I know I got a chance to speak to Daniel Kruchen, and he told me that even in practice and before revealing the lineup, he was really, really keen on playing fast, approaching football. And overall, the experience that he has, you know, he holds the UEFA A license and worked in Olympiacos.
I think sometimes they'll try and do that. I think obviously they like to switch it up as well. Like I think, like I mentioned before, I think they're just trying to keep possession and how many touches they can get in the middle, and then finding one of their studs up front and getting them a good chance. But you know, it's kind of like a running joke with Campiel.ca is how many times Bobby will say, "Oh, it's all about the technicals. It's all about the technicals." Every interview you ask him, and that's what he gets started with. So I think they just kind of focus on kind of doing the right thing and making the smart passes and trying to tire out the opponent's back end. And obviously for him, if you look at where he came from with Sigma FC, it's like half the team is from there, right? So they're all sort of used to his philosophy. I think when you talk to him, they can go fast too, depending on the half. And if he believes they're struggling and really not playing the way he likes, he'll, you know, get them moving the ball pretty quickly and get on the front foot. But overall, yeah, Crescent, I think, has a pretty good idea of what they do, but I think it switches from time to time.
Certainly. And guys, for leg one and leg two, how much does home field advantage influence here? Let's not forget that the away rule is in effect.
Yeah, I mean, every time I've seen Cavalry play Forge at Tim Hortons Field, Forge has definitely, I think, controlled possession and you know, just really pegged Cavalry back and forced them to defend for long stretches. And I assume that will happen again in leg one. In terms of Cavalry's home advantage, I think it's really going to be packed because obviously that's going to be the day that the champion is actually determined. So I'm expecting, you know, a 6,000-plus crowd with lots of, you know, cheering and singing. And, like, the foot soldiers have been fantastic this year in their support, and it really, you know, feeds into the rest of the stadium, especially in these games that have meant a little more than other games. Because when Cavalry played Montreal and Vancouver in the Canadian Championship, like, that place was rocking, and the stands are metal, and like the way the fans just, you know, jump up and down and stomp their feet and stuff, it really turns it into a very loud game. I don't know. Yeah, very loud. And I mean, the fans behind the goal on that one side where the foot soldiers stand, like, they will just kind of like taunt and harass the opposing team's goalkeeper and center backs and fullbacks whenever they're within earshot. I don't know if that plays into the performances of these players, but it's got to be hard to deal with. So fully expect home advantage to be to Cavalry's advantage in the second leg. And I also think it'll help Forge in the first leg, just given how well they've seemed to play there against Cavalry in the past.
For sure. And just quick follow-up question, if you could get that answer there, Scott. Could we expect a solid crowd at Spruce Meadows, just real quick?
I really think so, yeah. I'm not sure what exactly the attendance has to be for it to be a sellout, but the Montreal game was considered a sellout, and I think it was just shy of 6,000. So I think there's been a lot of hype. I think there's people who want to come to the game from like other cities and some even from as far away as Ontario, right? So I don't think they'll struggle to fill the stands for that particular game, similarly how they were able to fill the stands for the games against MLS teams.
Perfect. Nolan, same question for you. Home field advantage. Forge's home record, and obviously let's not forget here, the inaugural game, obviously, it's not going to get up to that point in terms of the fans, the 17,000. But what can we expect both on the field and off the pitch?
Well, I think it's going to be pretty packed. And I like Scott said, I think these two teams have really good home ground advantage is. I know David Klanikin, obviously the commissioner, he said he thinks HFX has the best home field, but man, when you're at Tim Hortons Field and it's, you know, a really competitive game and the Barton Troop Battalion just screaming their head off, it's pretty fun and pretty electric there. I obviously don't think it's going to be, I don't even know how many were at the inaugural game, whether it was close to 14,000 or not, because obviously the tickets were free, but it's going to be pretty wild. I think they're going to be selling all the scarves and everything too. I think it's going to help Forge in that first leg. They haven't lost at Tim Hortons Field since July 6th, right? So it's been forever. Whereas Cavalry, I bet if you ask Scott, that, you know, last time they lost at home was probably ages ago as well. But that's what kind of worries me a little bit if I'm Forge FC, is that second leg being in the cold in Calgary. Obviously, you know, they can practice, you know, to that cold and, you know, the wind or whatever, you know, is going to be flying out there out west. So I think that's obviously going to be a huge advantage for Calgary. So I guess Forge is going to have to pour it on in front of their home fans, but they do usually a pretty good job at doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the state of the pitch can really vary at Spruce Meadows too. I don't think the equestrian season is in full flow right now like it was in the summer, but there were games, right, where Cavalry were playing a few days after an equestrian event or a horse show jumping event. And yeah, you could see the divots, you could see the areas of the pitch, especially by the corner flags where it was just muddy and torn up. So November 2nd, I mean, Calgary has really unpredictable weather. It could be nice, like it could be 15 degrees. Adversely, it could be minus 10 degrees, like that game on October 9th. So I think that could also play in Calgary's favor because they've been playing on this pitch all year. So state of the pitch up to be determined, but regardless, I think Calgary will have an advantage with that.
And Scott, you touched base on the weather. Guys, for both of you, how cool would it be, you know, to have the story of the first ever Canadian final for it to be snowing? You know, like what kind of storyline would that make elsewhere around the world?
It's pretty wild. I think it would be kind of a perfect ending if you ask, you know, both coaches, the commissioner. That's sort of what they want, right? And that's all us Canadians have pride in how we can bear this cold and snow. So I think that would be a perfect ending to a season. And I think whether some of the players don't like it or not, I think it would be pretty intriguing as well, and would get a good laugh and excitement from all the fans.
Yeah, I think it would be almost poetic in that Canada's first year return to professional soccer. There's snow on the first match day and the last match day, because obviously May 4th was Cavalry's home opener against York, and there was like a blizzard halfway through the game. So if you have a league where it could snow at the beginning of the season and the end of the season, I think Canada is one of the only places in the world where that's possible.
Guys, injury reports. I know we touched base on it previously in the other questions. From your own knowledge, do you guys know, besides obviously Dominic Samuel, who is suspended, do you guys know from both teams, from guys picking up a knock at that won't be available but obviously isn't publicly known?
I actually don't know. I mean, I didn't see anyone on crutches or anything like that at the last game. I know, like, obviously Nick Ledgerwood had a pretty nasty looking head-to-head the last time these two teams played each other. I asked Tommy after the Edmonton game, you know, how he was doing, and because he didn't dress, but Tommy said if it was up to Nick, he would have played in that Edmonton game. They just rested him for precautionary measures. He's the only one, I think, who could possibly be injured. Obviously, like apart from the players who've been injured for a while and it's known that they're out for the season, like Mauro Eustachio and Dean Northover and Chris Durbin. But no, I was keeping an eye out, and it seems like Calgary has a really fit roster heading into this.
Right. So after besides those three players are out for the season, from looking at the practices, you haven't seen anybody that hasn't been practicing out there?
No, I don't think I have, no.
Nolan, what about you? What have you seen from Hamilton?
Well, I think it depends a little bit. I've been asking around, just trying to get some injury reports too, because it's been pretty pretty wild there. Obviously, the big question mark is Jonathan Grant. He's been dealing with hamstring injury, and he's, you know, whether he, you know, he'll play. It's kind of happened all year where he'll play a match and then kind of sit off for one and then get back in. It's kind of been a lingering injury, and it's, that's something he's used to, right? He's been in a kind of an injury-prone player, which is a shame, but you can kind of see the impact he has in that August 25th game. He had the goal, you know, against Calgary at Tim's Field to give Forge a victory there. Cadell Thomas has been dealing with, you know, an injury as well, and you know, he probably has the goal of the year, right? That one against Valor. So I think it'll just depend on those two guys. Everyone else should be fine. Obviously, Novak is good to be in 100%. It seems like. So I think it's just between those three guys. Those have kind of been the only injury types this year. So I guess that's just going to be a question on Grant and Thomas.
Excellent. So fair to say then that both coaches are almost or there at least at full strength and have all their weapons and pieces of the puzzle to work with. For leg one, give me you guys' predictions result-wise.
I personally think Forge is going to – I don't know why I feel like this, but I think they're going to score two quick goals in the first leg and put Cavalry down 2-0 very quickly within the first maybe 15 or 30 minutes. But I have a feeling Cavalry will score one in that game, and it'll end 2-1 like so many of the other games that these – well, not so many, but I think a few other games between these two teams have ended 2-1. And then you know, that'll give Cavalry an advantage heading into the second leg. But I do think Forge will come out on top in the first leg.
Yeah, so I have Forge coming out on top in the first one, too. I think just, at you know, being at home really helps out quite a bit. I did mention some of the, you know, Tristan Henry struggles, but he has been playing well of late. So I think this one's going to be 1-0. I see a late goal by Borges to just blow I guess that blows the non-existent roof off of Tim Hortons Field and get that crowd jumping up and down.
So will both of you be there to cover both games? For leg one and two, respectively.
So leg one, I've been talking to the guys, and I think just because obviously the commute isn't, you know, too bad from the guys coming from downtown on King Street up to Hamilton. I think I don't have to be there, so I don't have to be grinding into my laptop and making sure I've got all the notes you know, up to par and then writing the articles. I think I might be able just to enjoy the game and enjoy some food and a couple drinks, which will be a nice treat, but I'll have to get back from the guys like John and Armin back at the website, but I'm pretty sure most of them are going to be the ones covering it. But hey, they're the best, some of the best in the biz, so I guess that's a good thing for all the audience.
I have applied for media accreditation for the November 2nd game. Still awaiting my approval for that accreditation. But I've been to lots of home games this year, so I really am banking on being there to both take photos and participate in the press conference after the match and write a recap.
Excellent, excellent. And guys, to finish off on a great note, how special would it be for this game on CBC that will be broadcasted there, to get a viewership and maybe to make the mainstream headline, because obviously these two games are late October, early November, but with the U.S.-Canada game, talking current events, if Canada were to beat the U.S., like, the whole country would just shift its focus to soccer, and then it could be really, really good for the league for next season to for each of the seven or maybe eight clubs. We're still waiting expansion news to sell more tickets and have a much larger attendance. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, there's been ups and downs this year in the CPL, but I'd say overall it's been a tremendous success, right? With seeing things like Carducci and Didich from FC Edmonton called up to the national team, seeing Cavalry go as far as they did in the Canadian Championship, beating the likes of the Vancouver Whitecaps on the way, and giving Montreal Impact the eventual Cup champions, like a serious run for their money. And then obviously with Forge and the success they had in the CONCACAF League and that international exposure of the league, of the CPL. Like so many success stories this year, and that hypothetical that you laid out, like, yeah, I mean, if Canada could, you know, really think of this league as something to like cherish and to support, like, I would just love to see that happen, and I'd love to see, you know, the first Canadian Premier League player to actually step onto the pitch for the national team and just help those guys continue to grow and to exceed expectations.
Yeah, I think it's been a huge success, and I really don't think anybody thought it would have been that successful in this first year, but, you know, I think David Klanikin and all the teams and all the fans are proving everyone wrong, right? I remember telling people I got this job, and they were kind of just like, man, I don't know if it's going to last. Like, there were people doubting it, right? Because obviously there's such a high demand in hockey and basketball in Canada. But, hey, like, CPL's kicking butt right now, and obviously it helps out when Canada's beating U.S. Obviously, Cavalry's success has been, you know, really huge, a huge part of this league. Carducci getting the call-up was really cool. And like I mentioned before, the Cadel Thomas goal, it was all over social media. And I believe it was 500,000 people saw it. Like, so I think it's really great stuff as well. I forget the player's name on York 9. One of his strikes was in ESPN's, like, you know, top 10 plays of the night or whatever. So I think it's a really good exposure for the league. If there's, you know, going to be an expansion coming up, that'll be huge too. I think everyone's really getting behind this league, which is a really good thing to see, especially when there were so many doubters before. Now I think they've gained quite a few believers.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Definitely, guys. Thank you so much for joining me, and really appreciate it. And I definitely think this will be hopefully one of many other phone call interviews that we'll have in the future.